hearing House Bill 5031 from the Department of Human Services Health Services, Division of Medical Assistance Programs, and would you go over the bills to...
Sure. Madam Chair, members, again, this is House Bill 5031, the budget bill for the Department of Human Services, and we've been progressing through children, adults, and families. Most recently, we've been working on health services. We worked on public health. We've finished up with mental health. And today we'll start on the third division within the health services program area, which is the Division of Medical Assistance Programs. On your agenda, you can see the three major components of that division: the Oregon Health Plan Payments section, Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, and non-OHP payments. With that, Madam Chair, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to welcome Mr. Edge, a new person in the department. And is that to Oregon as well? Please join us. And if you feel as if you need help, I was about to say, if you feel as if you need help from your partner right now, she can come now or come later. But welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Carter, members of the committee. I am Jim Edge. I'm the...
Excuse me. I'm glad to see you in here. I haven't seen you this whole session. Good to see you. Thank you.
I'm Jim Edge. I'm the interim administrator of the Division of Medical Assistance Programs in the Department of Human Services. And with me is Ms. Jeannie Phillips, who is the interim deputy administrator, actually in the position that I was in 3 weeks ago until I was moved as an interim into this position. She was moved as an interim into that position. And Lynn is in the audience today, the other deputy in the Division of Medical Assistance Program. She will be doing a section next week on more detail on the budget. And I'm hoping you have some understanding. If I stumble a little bit during the presentation as an interim, I'm going to play that up as long as I can.
This is a wonderful committee. They will ask hard questions, but you will never be treated with discourtesy.
Thank you. What we plan to do today, if you want to follow along in the book, is looking at page 3, the table of contents. If we have time, we would like to cover everything on the first page of the table of contents. Start with an overview of the Division of Medical Assistance Programs, then a discussion of programs, a discussion of services, a discussion of clients and client groups, a discussion of how services are delivered, and then finish up with why these services are important to Oregon and Oregonians. So with that, I will begin on page 7 of the notebook, if you're following along there, which begins with the mission and goals of the Division of Medical Assistance Programs. It's written out for you there, so I won't read it word for word, but the mission is to help Oregonians become healthier, more self-sufficient, safe, and give them access to medical services. Goals include such things as supporting systems that promote access to care for low-income Oregonians, supporting the healthcare provider system, paying for services using federal matching funds, and that is one of the primary advantages of the Medicaid program and the Oregon Health Plan, is that we bring in significant amounts of federal matching funds, 60% approximately in most cases, but some parts of our program get even higher matching rates. Another goal is to increase managed care enrollment. Managed care enrollment gives better access to services and ways to control health care costs. Another goal is decreasing the number of people without health care coverage, in other words, reducing the uninsurance rate in Oregon. Another goal is improving the quality of care, collaborating with others to improve health outcomes, promoting the use of prevention and chronic disease management, and one of the ways we especially do that is by putting those types of services high on our prioritized list of health services, and we will get into a further discussion of what that prioritized list is and how it works later in the presentation. Working with the federal government and responding to federal requirements and initiatives, because the federal government pays for a part of the cost of services, actually the majority of the cost of services. Medicaid is considered a joint federal-state program. And so we work with them on everything we do. We pretty much have to get approval from them about every change we would want to make and be responsive to changes they make at the federal level. I'm participating in Oregon Health Reform. The Oregon Health Plan itself was a major step in health care reform that came out of the late 1980s, early 1990s, and was a huge step in health care reform, made Oregon a leader in health care reform at the time. And now we have discovered that it wasn't everything we needed. It isn't doing as much as we had hoped, and there is considerable discussion going on about additional reform and legislative committees discussing that. And those of us who are working with the Oregon Health Plan and in Division of Medical Assistance Programs certainly want to contribute to that in any way we can.
So let me ask you a question. Are you working with the committee that's doing considering health reform now?
Madam Chair, yes, we are working primarily through Dr. Goldberg at this point, who is attending and facilitating many of those committee meetings and comes back to us and discusses with us and asks for information from us. I have not personally been attending those meetings. He has been our department's representative there. But, yes, we're participating.
Good.
And finally, the last one that's listed here is collaborating with the private sector towards effective and efficient medical care delivery system. And I would just add there that although we think of the Oregon Health Plan as a public assistance program, and it is, it's also an insurance program, and we need to keep in mind that it's just a specialized insurance program for the low income and disabled in Oregon. Works with other insurances in Oregon to provide part of the overall health care system, and brings with it the advantage of some significant federal dollars to the state of Oregon. Moving to the next page, page 8. Talk just briefly about the history of the Oregon Health Plan. Many of you have been around as long or longer than I have. I've been within the Division of Medical Assistance Programs doing various other positions for 7 years. But going back in time, Medicaid is a program that started in the mid-1960s and operated as a joint federal-state program for a number of years. It was in the late 1980s that people in Oregon, some leadership in Oregon, began looking at the Medicaid program and looking at issues and problems with the Medicaid program as it currently existed. The fact that there were still a significant number of people who had no health insurance. The Medicaid program was set up with categories of beneficiaries, and you had to qualify in special ways to be in one of those categories. We still had about 18% of all Oregonians and about 20% of our children uninsured at that point in time. And the group of healthcare leaders who were looking at it were looking for something better. They were looking at the fact that those individuals who have no access, who had no access to health insurance at that time, it didn't mean that they didn't get any health insurance. It meant that they got their health insurance through emergency services, primarily through emergency rooms, which ends up creating what we often refer to as cost shift. Simply requires others to raise their prices in order to compensate for individuals who had no way to pay for their health care. States at that time, other states other than Oregon, were experiencing some of the same problems, and the tools that were often used by states to deal with shortfalls and with uninsurance were to take steps to reduce the number of people that could be covered or take steps to reduce the reimbursement rates that were being paid. But that was a spiral that simply led to more cost shifting and was not an answer. So in 1987, a group of healthcare providers and consumers and representatives of business and representatives of labor and representatives of insurance programs that were in place at that time and lawmakers began meeting and discussing a different way to do things and came up with some basic concepts that they would like to base this new plan on. Those are the bullets at the bottom of page 8. All citizens should have access to a basic level of health care. Society is responsible for financing care for people with low incomes. There must be a process to define a basic level of care. The process must be based on criteria that are publicly debated, reflect a consensus of societal values, and considered the good of society as a whole. That last bullet is actually still the tenets that the Health Services Commission uses, which is the governor-appointed body that developed initially and keeps our prioritized list up to date. And they take exactly these things into consideration as they develop and recalculate that prioritized list each biennium. The Oregon Health Plan is what emerged from all of these discussions as an attempt at reform of the healthcare system in the late 1980s, an attempt at taking the public-sponsored Medicaid at that time and moving forward and trying to do something different that would work better. In 1991, the Department of Human Services, then at the direction of the legislature, went to the federal government, to what is now called the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and requested an opportunity to begin a demonstration project. In order to do a demonstration project, a state has to go to the federal government and propose a better way of doing things with the same funding that they were getting through the traditional Medicaid program. And Oregon proposed as two of the major things that they wanted to change was to cover everyone below the federal poverty level and to do it in large part with savings from using a prioritized list of health services. The federal government wasn't immediately receptive to that, and it took 3 years of negotiation with them before they finally came around to agreeing to that proposal. And it was in February of 1994 that we actually had finally gotten approval and began the Oregon Health Plan. So the Oregon Health Plan has been in existence now for about 13 years. We got a 5-year demonstration project in 1994, and then we've gotten renewals of the project. The renewals of a demonstration are for 3 years each. Our current renewal expires this year, in October of this year, and we have applied for and expect to get another 3-year extension of our demonstration project. So that's a in a nutshell, the history of the Oregon Health Plan.
Madam Chair, and Jim, can you talk a little bit, if you want, or maybe you're going to cover this later, how has your renewal application that you submitted October of 2006, has that changed anything? Is it requesting changes?
Madam Chair, John, we submitted a renewal application 1 year prior to the expiration of our current demonstration, which was October of last year. We requested an extension of existing terms and conditions in that. We requested a bit more flexibility than we had, but no new programs in that proposal, knowing that there might be something that would come out of this legislative session that might change it, and we'd simply request an amendment at that point if we did. They didn't do much in the way of responding to that program or to that proposal until just recently, and just within the last couple of weeks, we have begun getting questions back from them, requests for additional information, requests for additional budget data, and our staff has been pretty busy the last 2 weeks responding to questions from them, and they seem to be putting it on a fast track at this point because it's getting close to the time when they have to respond to us and have to give us an approval. They actually, according to federal regulations, I think are supposed to give us our approval, I think, 6 months prior to the implementation date. So they're
they procrastinated a bit, and they're having to do a little catch-up right now. Moving to page 10 of your booklet, I'll spend just a few minutes talking at a very high level about the budget. And there will be a more detailed section probably Tuesday of next week, I think, where we will go into the budget in more detail. But just a high-level look at the...
Excuse me for a minute, Mr. Edge. Colleagues, if there are questions that you might have, because we'll be spending approximately 40 minutes with Mr. Edge and 40 minutes... Ms. Phillips, thank you. So if you have questions, please feel free to ask us. Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, on page 10, moving into an overview of the budget, and first looking at a high-level overview of the total amount of funds in the Division of Medical Assistance Programs, you'll see that first pie chart shows a $4.8 billion total funds in the Division of Medical Assistance Programs in the Governor's recommended budget for 07-09. If you look at the colors on that chart, you'd see that $4.1 billion of that is for Oregon Health Plan Medicaid, $231 million of it is for the Oregon Health Plan Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, $367 million of that is for the non-Oregon Health Plan Medicaid. That's a group of programs that are Medicaid programs, but that are not part of our demonstration. They're not part of our demonstration project. It includes things like the breast and cervical cancer project, like some Medicare premiums that are paid for by Medicaid for individuals who are eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid and meet certain qualifications. Depending on what those people qualify for, they may be eligible to have premiums, Medicare premiums paid for. Some of them may be eligible to have copayments and deductibles and coinsurances also paid for. And then you see a small sliver, two small slivers of that pie chart, which is our administrative budget, program support and central administration. And we're actually pretty proud of the fact that that our administrative budget is about 1.5% of our total budget, which is a pretty small amount. And below that chart, you see in bar chart form basically the same information. The $4.8 billion, and it's split out and showing in bar charts, and the bars have a split of which portions of those are general fund, other fund, and federal fund. Moving to page 11 of the presentation, there's a high-level overview of the general fund portion of the Division of Medical Assistance Programs, and showing that in pie chart form. This is what's in the Governor's recommended budget again for 07-09. The largest part of this is the base budget amount of $694 million. You see some other sections of this, one of them for inflation, one of them for mandated caseload growth. There's a section called fund shifts, which includes things like changes in federal matching rates, changes in tobacco tax, and other budget adjustments that have been made. There's a very small sliver of it called phase in and phase out, which I don't fully understand myself yet, but I know an example of a phase in is Medicare Modernization Act changes that have been made. Phase out is a provider tax change that has been made, minor changes that have been made, that all comprise part of the Governor's recommended budget for 07-09 general fund portion. Page 12. This is the last page of the high-level overview of the Division of Medical Assistance Programs, and it shows our organizational chart. You see right in the middle of that organizational chart is Lynn Reed as our senior assistant administrator, and she has primary responsibility for budget and finance and operates a section of Division of Medical Assistance Programs. To the right of that is Jeannie Phillips, who is an interim assistant administrator and has primary responsibility for policy and planning. Way over to the left of that is Alice Labansky, who is the manager of our operations section and has responsibility for all of the operational components of carrying out the business of the Oregon Health Plan. Down below, the research, education, and development section, which is currently managed by interim manager Sandy Wood. And to the right of that, our quality improvement and medical section, which is managed by Mr. John Pelkey, who is a fairly new employee to the Division of Medical Assistance Programs, came to us from a position at the Salem Hospital recently, and is helping us incorporate some additional quality improvement activities into our medical assistance programs. So that's the overall education, overall organizational structure of
Senator Wardley.
Thank you very much. Before we leave this page, what does diversity look like in your agency?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I don't have that information, but I'll get that information for you. We have that available. We'll get that.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you.
At the bottom of this chart, you'll see that there are 165 total staff in the Division of Medical Assistance Programs. Actually, in terms of number of staff, we're one of, if not the smallest in the Department of Human Services, but we administer a lot of money, the $4.8 billion that's administered by the Division of Medical Assistance Programs. Past the next tab, we'll spend a few minutes talking about services and the fact that the Division of Medical Assistance administers coverage for three main categories of medical assistance programs: the Oregon Health Plan Medicaid program, the Oregon Health Plan Children's Health Insurance Program, and the non-Oregon Health Plan Medicaid, which is, as I said before, not part of the demonstration project. And just to put this into context of what all this this covers, the Division of Medical Assistance Program provides assistance to about 700,000 of Oregon's citizens in a biennium. At any one time, it's not that many. We currently have, I think, at any one time, about 400,000 people receiving services through the Oregon Health Plan. But people, as they have needs, as their family situation changes, as their employment situation changes, come onto the health plan or go off of the health plan, and it actually serves about 700,000 people in a biennium. To drill down just a little bit more into what's under our demonstration project and talk about the Oregon Health Plan Medicaid and Oregon Health Plan Children's Health Insurance Program, these are operated under what's often called a Section 1115 waiver. Section 1115 just refers to the section of the Social Security Act, the Federal Social Security Act, under which this operates. And actually, more recently, there has been another opportunity made available by the federal government called HIFA, Health Insurance Flexibility and Accountability Act waiver. And through that act, Oregon in 2002 was able to begin getting federal matching funds on the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, operated under the Office of Private Health Partnerships, OPHP. So that today we have the Oregon Health Plan public side operated under the Department of Human Services. We have an interagency agreement with the Office of Private Health Partnerships, and we're able to get matching funds on the work that they do with assisting people with their health insurance premiums. And together, that's all part of the Oregon Health Plan, operated under an interagency agreement between the two agencies as a single state Medicaid agency.
At some point, and not today, will we be able to get a breakout of one, how many children are served under CHIP, and what, how many is being served under FEOP, and kind of bring the two universes together, and I maybe get that from Rocket.
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, yes, we will get that for you, and I think that that's part of our presentation as we get a little deeper into the budget and the services part of this.
While we're taking a break, I just want to welcome SEIU, who's visiting the Capitol today and attending our committee hearing.
Okay, moving to page 14, there are some graphs on the next two pages that show at a high level overview of the Oregon Health Plan Medicaid funds. The first one shows total funds by fund type, and you see there that federal funds are the largest part of that. It's a total of $4.1 billion in the Oregon Health Plan Medicaid part of what Division of Medical Assistance operates. Federal funds are $2.5 billion of that. General funds are $801 million of that. Other funds are $818 million of that. And if you take that red slice of the pie and move it down to the bottom half of the page, there's a breakout of what other funds means. And it shows there that of that, there's existing tobacco taxes of $315 million, new proposed tobacco taxes of $95 million, provider taxes, which are the funding that currently operates the Oregon Health Plan Standard Program, of $253 million, and all other of $154 million, which includes some small components such as the drug rebates for the drugs we pay for, some settlements, and some leveraging of funds that we do.
So, Mr. Edge, what happens if the proposed funds do not become a reality? What will you be cutting out?
Madam Chair, the tobacco tax proposed is the part of this governor's recommended budget that would fund the Healthy Kids program.
Okay.
Also, on that tobacco tax for the Oregon Health Plan Medicaid side, there is a proposal to expand OHP standard, and I think you're going to be reviewing those policy option packages as you go through your presentation, right?
We will.
But Healthy Kids is in there, OHP standard expansion is in there, and there are a couple other smaller
pieces. There's a small component that would increase reimbursement
right.
to some of the providers who have not seen increases in several years.
Right.
On page 15 of the notebook, there's a high-level breakout in the same way of the Children's Health Insurance Program, showing that federal funds, there's a total of $231 million in that program. Federal funds make up $156 million of that, and other funds make up $74 million of that. The yellow section there is a little bit larger than what is on the page on the left-hand side, because the federal government pays approximately 70% of the cost of the Children's Health Insurance Services, where they pay closer to 60% of the costs of other Medicaid services. And the graph at the bottom of that page simply takes the other fund portion, the red slice of the pie in the upper pie chart, and splits it into tobacco tax existing and tobacco tax proposed that we just discussed, that is where the Healthy Kids program would be funded from. On the next page, page 16, there is a brief discussion on the left side and then a graph about the non-Oregon health plan and the groups that are covered there, the services that are provided. These components of our program cover those individuals who are Medicare beneficiaries and also Medicaid.
The small program called the Breast and Cervical Cancer Program is part of the non-Oregon Health Plan part of our budget. There's a very small part of our budget, which is a general fund account that was set up after the medically needy program was eliminated during the 2000s.
Just to go back a little bit on the the proposed tax and the tobacco, existing tobacco tax, that total comes to 74.4, and that the proposal is for 95.8. What's the other 21.44? I missed that.
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, there is a proposal in the governor's recommended budget that tobacco tax be used not just for the Healthy Kids program, but also to fund an increase in the OHP standard program and the increase in some provider reimbursements.
If you could help me understand the breast and cervical cancer program, I'm thinking of the new medication that's available now for cervical cancer. Help us understand exactly how the program and the payments are set up, and will the existing program extend to that new medication that's available, and however that's supposed to play out?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, the breast and cervical cancer program is a special program, and it will be discussed in quite a bit more detail as we get further into this. It's a program that is available to women of I better not say. There's a certain age range that it's open to. There's a screening process that's administered by our public health division that people go through to become eligible for this program. And once determined eligible, they are eligible for the benefit package of the Medicaid program. The services provided under this are the full benefits that would be provided to a Medicaid client. If there are new drugs available, they would be made available to these clients the same as new drugs for any other Medicaid client, as they're approved by the Food and Drug Administration and made available through the drug companies for the services that are needed. It's the same benefit package as Medicaid clients.
Thank you.
I was mentioning that there's a very small general fund amount made available to continue to provide drugs for organ transplant patients who lost their services when the medically needy program was eliminated in 2003. And we continue to operate that very small program to provide those anti-rejection drugs to a small population of transplant clients. And then the other non-Oregon Health Plan patients are for the Medicare insurance premiums for those who are eligible for that. Medicare Part D comes into this area too. Medicare Part D is the new drug benefit that was begun a little over a year ago in the Medicare program. When the Medicare program began providing a drug benefit, it changed things in terms of what the Medicaid program does, in that prior to that time, individuals who were eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid received their drugs primarily through Medicaid. We paid for those drugs through the Medicaid program. When the Medicare program began providing Part D drugs, the federal government required the states to pay them essentially the amount that we had been paying out for those drugs for those people. So the states are helping fund that Medicare Part D program.
So that's a clawback.
That's what's called a clawback. The federal government doesn't call it a clawback. They think that's kind of a disparaging way of referring to it, but the states call it a clawback.
Madam Chair, I was just saying to Senator Winters that the reference reminds me of the wonderful workshop and conference that Senator Winters coordinated for legislators well over a year ago, maybe close to 2 years ago, to help us get prepared for this new public policy arena. Thank you again.
Thank you. Page 17, there is again a pie chart of this non-Oregon health plan part of our budget, and you can see that over half of it is Medicare premiums, $201 million. A significant part of it is the Medicare Part D clawback, $128 million. And then looking down below, you see the non-Oregon health plan budget by fund type, and it's $217 million in general fund, $145 million in federal funds. And a tiny sliver of that is that red sliver there. That's a proposal in the governor's recommended budget for $5 million of the new proposed tobacco tax money to go to hospital payments.
Is that, Madam Chair, is that in the co-chair's budget?
No.
Not in the co-chair's budget. Okay.
Moving to page 18, there's a section at the top of page 18 that talks a little bit about determining program eligibility. Eligibility is a shared responsibility within the Department of Human Services. The Division of Medical Assistance Programs doesn't have a field staff like Children, Adults, and Families Division does, and the Seniors and People with Disabilities Division does. We don't have eligibility workers like those programs do. So most of the eligibility determination is done by eligibility workers in those divisions, but it's a shared responsibility. We create with them the eligibility rules and the rule changes, and overall, the Division of Medical Assistance Program is responsible for the eligibility determination for the Oregon Health Plan, but we rely on our sister divisions to do much of the actual work with the eligibility workers in those divisions. And at this point, I'm through with my part of this initial discussion.
Even though you don't have the actual field to do the eligibility determination, do you have a quality control component inside of OMAP to make certain that things are accurate and on point?
Madam Chair and Senator Winters, yes, there is quality control within that. There are periodic reviews and audits done of eligibility to make sure eligibility determination is done appropriately. And we work closely with eligibility determination in our sister divisions. In fact, if there are errors in eligibility determination, I guess I'm the one at this point that's responsible for those errors because we are the Medicaid agency and take that responsibility seriously.
You can remove yes, you are.
Quick question. Are you systems in place now, not only periodic audit reviews, to where you can actually pinpoint and determine where in the branch that you're getting the most error rates and what have you? You know, it's been one of my concerns that we make certain that we connect the field with the state office and that we don't just look at individual errors, but we look at systemic issues as well. So I wondered if those systems are in place to allow you to begin to do that.
Madam Chair and Senator Winters, there are systems like that in place. I don't have real good knowledge of them. We will get information for you about that and let you know in writing exactly what those are.
Thank you. Senator Marcel?
Thank you. How are we doing with the repayment for the wraparound services to the various federally funded clinics and so on? That was an issue at one time.
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, we do have a process in place to do wraparound payments. Are you referring to the hospital-based rural health clinic wraparound payments that have?
Well, a federally funded clinic, for instance, in Springfield, when I visited that was their first question. Why do we have to wait 7 months to have payments? And we did discuss that in my committee last year, and I know Barney Spate was working on that, and we tried to get it down to in some cases even a 30-day for new clinics particularly, and so I'm not sure where that is right now.
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, yes, we have been working with a number of the fairly qualified health centers to improve and speed payments to them. We identified it was either 6 or 8 clinics where we would pilot that process. We have been doing that over the past 2 years since the last session when we did discuss it in your committee. And we're continuing to work with the federally qualified health centers and hope to expand that. But yes, it is working. We have sped up payments and it is resulting in faster payments.
One of the problems, I think, is in some cases the lack of online communication maybe with some of the clinics. One of the things that I had suggested is a period of reconciliation every 6 months where, I don't know if this was even thought of or implemented, or a suggestion was that repayments, money is sent immediately to the clinics or as soon as possible, and then about every 6 months they have a period of reconciliation where you look at over and under and you reconciliate over and under payments. That way clinics would receive it timely, but I understand that sometimes they don't get their bills in on time either. I mean, it works both ways.
Yes.
But the reconciliation idea I've always thought was a good one if you could do that and then, you know, to get the payments as soon as possible.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, we did discover as we looked into it more that it wasn't just slow payment by the Division of Medical Assistance Programs. There were issues with getting the data from the federally qualified health centers. And so we're working on both of those things as we try to work out faster payment processes.
Okay. Well, one of the problems is that, you know, the delay in getting the paperwork done, but that was the idea of reconciliation, that if they, through no fault of their own, didn't have that, they could submit and then it could be reconciled. But that's a concept. I don't know how it would work in practice, but thank you very much for the information. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Further questions? Ms. George?
Thank you. I will turn it over to Ms. Phillips at this point to begin on page 18 and talk about services provided.
Thank you. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeannie Phillips, and I'm the Interim Deputy Administrator for the Division of Medical Assistance Programs in the Department of Human Services. And today I'll talk with you about what services are provided under the Oregon Health Plan, where our clients are located, who receives our services, and when we talk about the who, we'll talk about the caseload numbers that Senator Winters had asked about a little bit earlier and the eligibility categories. And finally, we'll talk about how services are delivered under the Oregon Health Plan. So we'll begin with services provided on page 18. And services under the Oregon Health Plan include physical health, mental health, chemical dependency, and dental care. The covered services are based on the Health Services Commission's prioritized list of health services. And as Jim mentioned earlier, the Commission developed and maintains the prioritized list, and they do update it for each legislative session. Then independent actuaries determine the cost to provide the services on the list, usually at several different levels. And then the legislature decides how much of the list to cover, subject to federal approval, and that sets our health care budget for DMAP. The covered services under the Oregon Health Plan are referred to as being above the line. And so a list of the categories of the services are shown for you on page 18, and they include services such as prescriptions, physician care, and hospital care. And these categories of services are covered as long as the condition and the treatment is above the funding line. Generally, services for conditions and treatments with the best potential for a good health outcome are toward the top of the list, and services are lower on the list if they're for conditions that would get better on their own, are primarily cosmetic in nature, or they have no effective treatment available. And for the 0709 biennium, the funding line is drawn at 503 out of 680 condition and treatment pairs. Uh-huh. Health care coverage to our clients are based on several different benefit packages, and these packages are listed for you on page 19, with OHP Plus and OHP Standard being the most commonly referred to benefit packages. Each package covers a different set of services, and a summary description is listed there for you on page 19. Looking down to the bottom half of the page, the Plus package covers the services that are above the line on the prioritized list, and the OHP Plus with limited drug covers exactly the same services as OHP Plus, with exception of the drugs that are covered through the Medicare program as a part of Part D. The OHP Standard program covers services, again, above the funding line on the prioritized list, but there are some exceptions that the legislature put into place to limit the benefit package for OHP Standard clients, and we'll go over those in just a second. And then we have Medicare premiums, copayments, deductibles are paid for clients that have coverage through the qualified Medicare beneficiary program. And for the specified low-income Medicare beneficiary program, that is such a mouthful, I know why they call it SLIMBY now, only the Part B premiums are paid. And then we also have the Citizen Alien Waived Emergency Medical Program, or CALM, and only emergency services, including labor and delivery, are covered under the CALM program. The coverage and any related limitations to services are first based on the prioritized list, and then secondly, on legislative direction. When we discuss who receives the services, we'll talk about the income eligibility requirements and the number of clients receiving each of these benefit packages. But if you'll refer to the chart on page 20, it will provide you with a little bit more detail regarding the covered service categories and the three primary benefit packages. You'll note on the OHP Standard Benefit Package that it has a number of limitations and exclusions that I referred to earlier, and listed below this chart are the limitations, are descriptions of those limitations. For example, the third item on the list is dental, and it's footnote number 2, and dental is limited to just emergency services in the OHP Standard Program.
Madam Chair, that means you only do extractions, right?
Madam Chairman and Senator Morissette, I don't know if I'd want to limit just to extractions, but you may know better than I.
Well, based on phone calls I've had from my constituents and having to get them into my dentist at no charge to them, because there was no alternative to extractions, which is too bad, because that's... Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a cost matter, I'm sure. But,
Madam Chairman and Senator Morissette, I know that is one of the complaints that we've heard. In fact, there's been a few studies that have come out recently that have talked about the importance of oral health and the impact that it has on your overall physical health. And so this very limited dental package has been a big concern.
Madam Chair,
Senator Morissette?
And I guess... there's nothing worse than an infected tooth that would spread into your body and so on. So the extractions, I get, you know, that's at least it gets rid of the tooth that has to be pulled. But it would be nice if we could add some preventative in there also. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
When are ambulances under here? Are they a part of what you do in terms of health care?
Madam Chairman, medical transportation is the 7th item, I believe, from the bottom.
Got it. Overlooking it. Thank you.
You're welcome. At the bottom of page 20, the other benefit packages that we covered earlier, the CALM and the Medicare programs, are listed there for you as well. Moving on to page 21, we'll take a look at where our clients are located. The chart on this page shows the number of clients in each county, what percent of the county population is made up of clients receiving Oregon Health Plan benefits, and the 2006 expenditures for their health care coverage. And as a frame of reference, The average percentage of county residents receiving the Oregon Health Plan benefits is 12.25%. And you see the largest percentages of county residents are located in Jefferson, Josephine, now here. The lowest percentages are in Benton and Clackamas, and then Jackson, Lane, and even Multnomah to a certain extent fall within the mid-range percentage of county residents receiving benefits under the Oregon Health Plan.
Madam Chair,
Senator Gordley,
could you provide an updated list of OHP clients by legislative district?
Madam Chairman and Senator Gordley, I don't know if we can provide that by legislative district. It's extremely difficult to break those populations out, but I will check into it, and if we can, I will get you that information.
Thank you.
Senator Morissette?
Thank you. How do they do the census? I mean, there must be some divisions that where they do break it out. If not legislative districts, cities, counties, there must be some records of doing that that might be helpful. I could see legislative districts not being as easy. Counties, whose boundaries don't change, might be available.
We have it by county.
Oh, we have it by
county. Yeah,
well, okay, you're looking at it. Yeah, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
These variances between the counties are a reflection of a variety of factors, including the local economy, the population size and mix, and just general geography. And if you'll turn to page 22, the map on this page gives you a visual display of the data that we've just covered on this chart for OHP clients as a percentage of projected population for 2006. We've talked about the services provided and where the clients are located. And if you'll turn to page 23, we'll take a look at who receives those services. There are basically five broad coverage groups in the federally required categories of individuals who are in financial need. And those groups are listed for you on page 23, and they include children, pregnant women, adults and families with dependent children, people with disabilities, and people who are age 65 or older. If we didn't have the Oregon Health Plan, we'd be required to provide Medicaid to these mandatory coverage groups in order to receive federal matching funds. The eligibility requirements to determine financial need do vary from program to program, but generally the income eligibility is tied to the federal poverty level. And if you'll refer to the chart on page 23, you'll see the monthly income guidelines by household size. And the chart reflects data at 100%, 133%, and 185% of the federal poverty level. And that gives you most of the upper income limits for individuals who qualify under the various programs. As indicated at the bottom of page 23, using our preliminary enrollment information for December, there's over 372,000 Oregonians that receive coverage under the Oregon Health Plan through the Medicaid and CHIP programs. Moving on to page 24, there are 322,000 individuals that receive the PLUS benefit package that we covered earlier, and that represents about 87% of the Oregon Health Plan population. And in the PLUS benefit category, there are five groups of individuals that do receive those PLUS benefits. The first group is low-income families with dependent children, and those are individuals who either receive or who are eligible to receive cash assistance under the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, often called TANF. And the eligibility limit, the income eligibility limit for TANF is 46% of the federal poverty level. That's about $658 a month for a family of three. Children in foster care, substitute, or adoption care also qualify for the PLUS benefit package. There are over 17,000 children in this category, and their income eligibility is also at 46% of the federal poverty level. For both children under 19 and people or pregnant women with family incomes under 185% of the federal poverty level, they qualify for the PLUS benefit package. And the last group are people who are age 65 or older or who are blind or disabled. And in this group, if they qualify for Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, that is administered through the Social Security Administration, or if they qualify for long-term care services and their income is under 300% of the federal poverty level, they will qualify for the PLUS benefit package. We have a little over 21,000 clients who receive benefits in the OHP Standard Program. And this program provides coverage to uninsured adults, primarily parents and childless adults, with incomes that are under 100% of the federal poverty level who wouldn't otherwise qualify for Medicaid or Medicare. And as I'm sure most of you are aware, the OHP Standard Program has been closed to new enrollment since July of 2004, when general funds were removed from the funding source for this program, or for this benefit package.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marsha.
Thank you. I know some of the money for funding of that program came from the hospital fee, which we see a federal match. Is that going to continue, to your knowledge, or did the feds put a stop to that?
Madam Chairman, Senator Morris, that we do have two legislative concepts, two bills that we'll be discussing with you during our presentation that deal with extending the provider taxes through the hospitals and the managed care organizations. Are those the funds that you're referring to, sir?
Yeah.
Yes. There are restrictions that have come out through the federal government. For hospitals, the impact of the federal changes is negligible.
Oh.
They've placed the maximum taxing authority at 5.5%, and we currently tax our hospitals at a lesser percentage than that. For the managed care plans, there is more of an impact, and the maximum, again, is 5.5%. We currently tax our managed care plan 6%. In addition, they're requiring that the managed care tax be a broad-based tax. And here in Oregon, our managed care provider tax program applies only to Medicaid managed care plans, not to all managed care plans.
Okay. Thank you very much for that information. Thank you.
We have a little over 17,000 clients who receive benefits through the Citizen Alien Waived Emergency Medical Program, or CAWM. This program is federally mandated. It's available to individuals who would qualify under the eligibility requirements of any of the other programs under the Oregon Health Plan. However, they don't meet the citizenship or immigration status requirements under Medicaid. Last month, approximately 96% of clients who were served in this program were females, and 95% of the expenditures were pregnancy-related. The chart on page 25 is a summary of the eligibility groups that we've just discussed, and it gives you a visual display of the coverage groups under the Oregon Health Plan Demonstration Project. Senator Carter had asked earlier, will you tell us what group are part of Medicaid and what groups are part of the CHIP program? If you look at the children bars listed here for the children 0 to 5 and the children 6 to 18, those that are in the lighter shading that are the optional programs are our CHIP children. The two bars at the end of this chart are for the expansion population. That's the OHP Standard Program, and that's also the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program. Those two programs, or clients under those two programs, qualify only as part of our OHP demonstration project. And as of December Senator Carter, we had 15,500 individuals that were participating in FEOP. However, I believe the Office of Private Health Partnerships will be able to give you their projections for the upcoming biennium. Turn to page 26, you'll see the section entitled Non-OHP Medicaid. So in addition to the populations that we've discussed that receive coverage under the Oregon Health Plan, Oregon Medicaid also supports two small optional programs, and it facilitates and supports Medicare coverage to additional clients. I'll try to go through this section quickly because I know Mr. Edge has already touched on many of these programs. The breast and cervical cancer program is actually administered by the Public Health Division. However, the budget is included with the Division of Medical Assistance Program. There's about 330 clients in that program right now, and it's available to women ages 40 to 65 with incomes below 250% of the federal poverty level. Clients that are in this program do receive the PLUS benefit package. We also pay a limited number of Medicare Part A premiums for about 700 clients. Those premiums usually run about $226 a month if those clients have worked and paid into the Social Security system. If they've never paid into the Social Security system, those premiums could be as high as $410 a month. We also pay Part B premiums for over 74,000 OHP clients and other Medicare beneficiaries. And paying the premiums for these clients makes Medicare the primary payer, and it offsets the cost that we would otherwise incur for the health care payments for these individuals. The Qualified Medicare Beneficiary Program serves about 11,700 clients who have income under 100% of the federal poverty level, and it covers the deductibles, co-payments, and Medicare premiums. The remaining category of other Medicare beneficiaries are the SLMBs, and it serves about 10,600 clients with incomes that range between 100% and 135% of the federal poverty level. For those higher income clients, we cover only the Medicare Part B premiums. Turning to page 27, Medicare Part D is addressed. Jim had mentioned that we pay a clawback to the feds once that they've started paying, or once the Part D program went into effect on January 1st of 2006 and they began paying for the drug costs for individuals who qualify for both Medicaid and Medicare. Initially, we're required to pay 90% of what we would have, what would have been the state share for those drug costs, but over the next 10 years, that percentage will decline to 75%. Currently, we're making those clawback payments for approximately 51,000 clients. It's paid monthly. It's based on a per member per month drug cost of around $96, a little over $96 per person. Our last non-Oregon Health Plan Medicaid program is addressed in the middle of page 27, and it's the limited drug coverage for certain former medically needy clients. The legislature has provided funding since 2003 for very limited drug coverage to clients who received an organ transplant and whose coverage ended when the medically needy program was eliminated in January of 2003. Coverage is only for drugs necessary to support their transplants. We began the program in 2003 with 109 clients. Today we cover approximately 40 clients.
One question on that one is, Mr. Phillips, if a person is in a plan, do they still have to call and sign up for the Medicare Part D? Or is the time over that a person cannot sign up if they have not already been signed up?
Senator Carter, They can still sign up for a plan. However, there's a penalty after a certain date if they didn't sign up for a plan. I believe originally, I'm going from memory here now, originally I think that was going to be in May or June of last year, but it may have been extended. I know the seniors and people with disabilities program will be providing an overview for you as well, and they will be providing more information on that Part D program.
So it's a 1% penalty every year?
1%.
That you didn't sign up, only if you already had an existing plan that's equal to or greater than what Medicaid offers.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the problems with that, I received a letter saying that I didn't have to sign up. I don't know if I still have that letter. If I ever needed to sign up and I can't find my letter, do I have to pay the penalty, or do we go back to the insurance company to reaffirm that I didn't need it? See, those are some of the problems. That if you keep the letter when you need it, you don't have a penalty. And I'm sure there are going to be people who... Well, I think I kept mine. I just don't know where I put it. It's a problem. There will be problems.
Madam Chair, I believe page 28 was actually out of order.
Okay.
Mr. Edge addressed those issues earlier on in his presentation, so if we'll all move to page 29.
Okay.
It's an overview of how services are delivered under the Oregon Health Plan. Under the Oregon Health Plan, the access is through both fee-for-service and managed care delivery systems. Approximately 23.8% of our clients receive services through fee-for-service providers, and those providers include clinics and any division of medical assistance programs provider who will accept Medicaid clients. The primary delivery system under the Oregon Health Plan is through managed care. The capitation rates are set by organization, and they're determined by an independent actuary. And according to Oregon law, the rates that are established are to cover costs of providing services. We use three managed care models for physical health care, and that includes a fully capitated health plan, a physician care organization, and primary care managers. The fully capitated health plans provide physical health and chemical dependency services, and there are currently 15 that coordinate care for the Oregon Health Plan recipients. We have only one physician care organization, and it differs from the fully capitated health plan only in that inpatient hospital costs are not included in their capitation payment.
Madam Chair, and you don't have to get it for me today, but do we have any place, any comparison data where we have 80% of our payments are through managed care organization in comparison to the rest of the world, rest of the states that I understand are pretty much fee-for-service, that shows that our payment structure is better than or how do we fit in the whole 50 with the 50 states? And when we look at fee-for-service versus managed care kind of a payment structure, I know if we're looking at, we don't have managed care throughout the state, but just taking that aside, where we do have, what is the comparison with the fee-for-service?
Madam Chairman, Senator Renners, as a matter of fact, we did try to get some information about a month ago or a few weeks ago for one of the committees that compared our managed care enrollment to other states. We've had a great deal of difficulty because of the way states define managed care and how they report it. For example, an individual may be enrolled in a dental care organization, and that individual would be listed as enrolled in managed care, so it doesn't give us a really valid comparison so we can compare apples to apples. However, we know how critical this information is, and we have put together a group, and we hope to have all of the information together and compiled by July or August of this year in trying to canvass the states. We do have some information that Mr. Edge will be sharing with you here shortly relating to how we compare in our cost per clients with other states, and he'll be able to share that with you today.
Follow up, do we also have the information to compare actually within our own borders the managed care and fee-for-service that also includes inside of that component the pharmaceuticals, including the rebate rates, so that you're getting a true picture of managed care versus fee-for-service? Because if I recall the last report that we got from Barney a couple of years ago, that the data that came back from the managed care organization was not all-inclusive.
And Madam Chairman and Senator Renners, I don't know the status of that study, but I will find out and I will get back to you.
Madam Chair and Senator Renners, it is difficult to do that comparison, partly because there are certain classes of drugs that are carved out of managed care and just paid for through fee-for-service, and partly because in the fee-for-service program we do get federal rebates on drugs that the managed care programs don't necessarily get, although they can negotiate prices and they do get some discounts too. So it does make it very hard to compare apples to apples, but we can supply it with the data that we have.
That's great, because I'd like to see that as well. Thank you.
Further questions?
Thanks.
Ms. Phillips?
We also provide physical health care through primary care managers. They coordinate and manage care for a monthly fee, and they also provide primary care. Currently, we have about 856 providers who act as primary care managers across the state of Oregon. The map on page 30 provides you with a visual of the percentage of OHP clients enrolled in a fully capitated health plan or a physician care organization by county as of December of last year. Approximately 73.6% of our clients are enrolled in a fully capitated plan or a physician care organization, and about 2.6% are enrolled with a primary care manager. In looking at the map, you can see the areas of the state with limited managed care penetration. Klamath, Marion, Deschutes, Multnomah, and Douglas are some of the counties that have managed care enrollment exceeding 80%. Jackson County falls in that 10 to 50% range. And we're continuing to work with the plans to expand their service areas, and we anticipate another plan will be serving Jackson County within the next few months. Some of the plans have also expressed an interest in expanding their service areas into Yamhill County. The map on page 31 shows you the percentage of OHP clients that are enrolled in a dental care organization by county. Again, this is information for December. And for dental services, we contract with seven dental care organizations, and our December enrollment was approximately 93.5%. As you can see across the state, enrollment exceeds 90% in all but about nine counties, with the greatest need being in Malheur, Gilliam, and Jefferson counties. Their enrollment has been running about 50 to 70%. And we'll continue to work with the dental care organizations as well to expand their services into these greater need areas. On page 32, you'll see information that relates to mental health services. Costs for the mental health services are included in our budget, but the Addictions and Mental Health Division are responsible for administration of the mental health program. We have nine mental health organizations who provide mental health care to most of our OHP Medicaid clients, about 91.5%. And these organizations coordinate their mental health care, and they provide both inpatient and outpatient care. As you can see, Jefferson County is below the 90 to 95% enrollment, and for those clients, that don't have access to or are not enrolled in a mental health managed mental health organization. They can receive their services through a community mental health program that's under contract or agreement with the Department of Human Services.
And did I hear you correctly that with those 9 MHOs that provide mental health services, that the that there is a carve out for pharmaceuticals?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Chairman, Senator Winters, Mr. Edges is helping me here, thank goodness, and he said yes, there is a carve out for mental health drugs.
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, yes, that's in fee for service.
But are they basically antipsychotic, or it covers all the mental health drugs?
All the mental health drugs, antipsychotics and antidepressant drugs are in a carve out in the fee for service program.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, that does conclude my remarks, and I'll return the floor to Mr. Edge, who will continue with the remainder of the presentation for today.
You have about 13 minutes. Do you want to begin on a new, or what's your pleasure?
Well, Madam Chair, we're right on time, and I think this is pretty amazing. We have 2 pages to cover, and I think we can do it right within the time available, if
all
that's
right.
Okay with you.
Okay.
We wanted to conclude the discussion with just a little discussion about why the Oregon Health Plan, why the services that we provide are significant to Oregon and significant to Oregonians. And I may be repeating some of the numbers that I talked earlier, but since the beginning of the Oregon Health Plan, 1.7 million people have received services through the Oregon Health Plan. That's not duplicated people, those are unduplicated people. Nearly 1 in 3 of all Oregonians have been on the Oregon Health Plan at some point in their lives. Not necessarily stayed on the Oregon Health Plan for a long period of time, but they've had a situation in their life that required them to seek help, and the Oregon Health Plan was able to help them. 45% of all births currently are paid for in the state of Oregon through the Oregon Health Plan. So it's a significant part of the health care program for our youngest children. At any one point in time, there are about 12% of all Oregonians on the Oregon Health Plan, and about 1/4, or 25% of all children on the Oregon Health Plan. So it is a significant insurance program to the state of Oregon and a significant driver of health care for our population. The charts that are listed in the middle of page 33 are to show a little bit about the efficiencies in the Oregon Health Plan and compare us to neighboring states. If you look at that, you see that Oregon actually has a fairly low expenditure per person, 45th out of 50 states, at $3,381 per person per year. And the chart to the right of that, you see that if you put that in terms of expenditures per total number of Oregonians in the state of Oregon, it's at $594 per person per year, which puts us at 43rd in the state, in the nation. We think that's at least in part because of our efficiencies in the program and our prioritized list of health services, which has allowed us to expand to more people without it costing us more money. The other thing I'm just noticing that we didn't put in this list of why the Oregon Health Plan is important to Oregon, and I will add at this point just verbally, is that the Oregon Health Plan is important to Oregon's economy. It brings in some federal dollars to Oregon's economy. It brings back federal money that Oregonians pay in taxes, federal taxes. It brings back to the state in the form of Medicaid money. And as you know, money that's brought in and spent actually gets respent and respent and contributes multiple times over to Oregon's economy. On page 34, there's at the top of that page just a brief discussion of how managed care is important to the state of Oregon. We have approximately 76% of our physical health clients in managed care, and approximately 90% of our dental and mental health clients in managed care. Managed care gives these clients access to a medical home, gives them better access to services because those managed care plans have provider panels and subcontracts with providers, so that we have more assurance that they will actually be able to have access to a provider. And they coordinate care and coordinate the delivery system in a managed care plan. Speaking of, just for a minute, about uninsurance, I thought I would mention the Oregon Health Plan is important in keeping Oregon's uninsurance rate down, knowing that we had a very high uninsurance rate prior to the Oregon Health Plan. Prior to the implementation of the Oregon Health Plan in 1994, the uninsurance rate of adults was about 18%. The uninsurance rate of children was about 19%. Early after the implementation of the Oregon Health Plan, the uninsurance rate fell dramatically, and it was down to about 11% for adults and 8% for children at one point. Unfortunately, the Oregon Health Plan is not the total solution to all of the medical care problems in our society, and costs have crept back up. Medical inflation costs have crept up. We're also seeing that the revenue available in the state of Oregon to fund the Oregon Health Plan hasn't kept up with the needs, and we've had to do things like close OHP standards. So as a result of those and maybe some other issues, the uninsurance rates have crept back up. Not to the level they were once at, but they've crept back up to the point where now we are at about 16% uninsurance for adults and about 12.5% uninsurance for children. And the other thing that we have listed here is, as a reason that the Oregon Health Plan is important to Oregon and Oregonians, is just thinking about our children and the fact that the Oregon Health Plan is a lot about children. I think over half of the clients in the Oregon Health Plan are children. And children need adequate medical care, they need adequate prevention in order for them to be healthy, in order for them to be successful in school, in order for them to not miss school days for illnesses, and so we feel it's making an investment in the future of Oregon to have the Oregon Health Plan in place doing what it does. So with that, we've concluded what we were hoping we could cover today. And if there's any questions, we'd be glad to answer them.
You guys did a good job.
Very good. I just like to ask that you add one other thing next time, Mr. Edge. And that is, could you provide us with, you've got a nice comparison of Western State ranking and the Medicaid expenditures as well as per resident. Could you also add our reimbursement rates? Because one of the challenges that we have, as you know, is, you know, the under Medicare, there was the issue of not adequate reimbursement rates, and so you have doctors who were not accepting patients because of the low rates. So it would be nice to get a ranking of where our neighbors are, because we know that the federal government doesn't treat us all equally across the 50 states.
Madam Chair and Senator, we'll do that. We'll get that information for you. Remember that 76% of our care is provided through managed care organizations, and that is provided based on an actuarial determination of the cost of providing care. So that those rates are given on a capitation rate per member per month to the managed care plans for them to make payments under subcontracts with providers. But I think what you're talking about is the fee-for-service rates.
Fee-for-service rates. And it's also well to know that, you know, some of our members don't know that we do not share the same federal rates as others, you know, whether it's Massachusetts, Florida, and what have you. And so, therefore, they don't have the same kind of understanding with respect to how the federal government plays into pretty much all that we do here in this building. I mean, we cannot separate the feds from health care and what have you. And I think it just gives a fuller, rounder picture, if you will, of the revenue dynamics that goes on and the need that goes on in our state. So just would like to add that little piece if you if you will, and just even encourage in our conversation that we're having with our federal delegation that it would be nice if they have that discussion back in Washington, D.C. It would be very helpful that we do get some fairness for the states who do well, and I think we were penalized. We were actually penalized because we did very efficient. And we did take in with the waivers and everything and said we can do a better job with the money that you give us, and as a result, by doing better, we get penalized. So I just need to put that on record and ask that you give us that piece.
Madam Chair, Senator Winters, yes, we will do that. And that feeds into the fact that every state has a different federal match rate, too. Oregon has just a little over 60%, 61 point something percent, I think it is. Some states have as low as in the 50s. Some states have as high as in the 70s and maybe even 80s. And you're right, our past efficiencies were part of the reason that we're at the place we're at 61%.
Some of us think we should be incentivized for doing good.
Thank you very much.
No further questions. We will discuss.